at the hall.
You need to send mom telling you, damn, go out to the building.
Yeah, they're a lot far. No, I only made it to one meeting, so still, my sister, I'm an engineer, and we like to talk about stuff, so, I mean, I don't know, you. Well, if I hadn't gotten on community development, I don't think I would have stayed on it, but since I did.
But I think where you want.
Oh, did anybody go to the daycare?
I was out of time, I was busy.
Well, my son's really happy for me because I won a brawler a month for a year. And a tour of one of the breweries in Buzzard, so. He's happy.
That is good, which brewery?
Stone Cold Brewery.
Hop and Barrel.
Hop and Barrel. Well, he's been to that distillery 45, he's been on that twice. He likes his whiskey.
We're going to do the financial announcements, of course.
That's right.
Right, add to your agenda, we'll do the.
John, it's on the bottom of the screen, just pop it up and you'll have your real PowerPoint.
Yeah.
Oh, okay, thank you. Appreciate it.
That's why you were there.
We could approve all three of these meeting minutes at the same time.
Yes, you can. And you don't have to approve them unless there's change, then you can change. Otherwise, they stand to be pressed. You would not be set.
Right. Right here, I said, it's all done.
Good evening, everybody. Welcome to the Community Development Committee meeting. I'd like to wish you all a good set in Demai, especially to anybody who happens to be from Woodville. The first order of business is to approve the meeting minutes from March 15, March 29, and May 3rd. And if nobody has any objection, I'd like to have them stand as approved as a set. Anybody have any discussion or problem with that? Seeing none, they are approved. Do we have anybody from the public who'd like to say anything on any subject on or off the agenda? Anybody from the public have anything to say? No. Alrighty. We have no public hearings, which brings us to our first business item. Update on the outdoor recreation plan and process. Ellen?
You didn't do a roll call.
Oh, no. Let's not skip roll call. Judy, would you start? Just introduce yourself, who you're with.
Judy Achterhoff, representing District 17, which is way over on the eastern side of St. Croix County.
Tom Coulter, District 4, North Hudson.
Ed Schachner, District 1, which is northwest corner of the county.
Dan Hansen, I'm with District 12, which is New Richmond and Starbury Township.
Ellen Denzer, St. Croix County Community Development Director.
Pat Thompson, County Administrator.
Brett Budrow, Community Development Department, Planning and Land Information.
John Hilgers, Planner, Community Development Department.
Julie Peterson, Community Development.
I would also note that we have Roger Larson, our County Board Chairman, and David Osnes, who's the County Board Vice Chair, and Ryan Shirley is here, who is visiting for tonight. So thank you for coming, Ryan.
So our first, as you said, the St. Croix County Outdoor Rec Plan, John Hilgers, our senior planner, is going to give you a brief overview of that. That is a project we do every 5 years. It is required to update it every 5 years or so. I should acknowledge we sometimes don't hit it exactly right on, but to remain eligible for grant in relation to outdoor recreation and trails and other things. John, thank you.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and committee members. We're just going to spend a few moments providing you a brief summary on where we are at with the update to the St. Croix County Outdoor Recreational Plan. The purpose of the plan accomplishes a number of functions. It serves as a guide in the development of county parks and facilities for the next 5 years. The initial plan for the county was done in 1970, with the most recent one done in 2013. The plan will provide a series of overarching goals for the development of county park facilities, and will also provide individual action plans for the 10 active facilities that are in the county at this time, and will also provide estimates for type of projects, funding sources, and dates. And maybe more importantly, the updated plan will enable the county and local municipalities to participate in the various grant programs administered by the DNR of Wisconsin for planning and development of parks and trails, stream bank protection, lake planning and protection, conservation improvements, and stormwater runoff management projects. The county's been very active and successful in pursuing and receiving these grants, and that'll be a staple of the plan document going forward. Just a quick summary, the 10 facilities within the county, a wide range of facilities, two full-service county parks at Homestead and Glen Hills on the east and west ends of the county, respectively. We have two county boat landings on Bass Lake and Squaw Lake. The Apple River property on the north side of the county provides canoe launch and hiking. Troy Beach on the St. Croix River for swimming. Pine Lake Park has a boat launch and a picnic shelter. And then we have two county forests within the county, Kinnikinnick and Stanton, along with one off-road trail, the Wildwood Trail in the southeast portion of the county. I'm just gonna summarize what will be in the plan update elements. I'm just gonna give you a snapshot of what's gonna be in each chapter. It's not gonna be the full plan information that will be coming forward in the next couple weeks. But this is just to familiarize yourself with the layout of the plan and what to expect when you get the full draft. Obviously, we need to update our social and demographics for county residents. We've done that. And just to give you a snapshot, the average age in St. Croix County is 38. 46.8% of the residents have college degrees of some sort, which is above the national average of 41.4%. Median household income of $78,850 is well above the U.S. average. And St. Croix County has a very high ownership rate of for homes at 78%, with the national average being 65%. And again, we'll elaborate that on that in the full plan document. We're also going to highlight some of the outdoor rec goals, but without getting into too much detail, the plan will promote the development of the countywide trail system, which was adopted as part of the 2017 St. Croix County Bike and Ped Plan. That'll include minor enhancements, which will include striping and signage of some major roads, as well as very specific off-road bike and pedestrian facilities. It will continue to be the emphasis that the county develop land to provide low-impact nature-based facilities such as hiking, biking, camping, and fishing. And this complements what the village and cities do. Many of the cities and villages provide organized sports such as softball, baseball, and things like that. Again, the county's niche will be to provide the outdoor nature-based experiences. The county will also continue to evaluate and update existing county parks, facilities, and trails to meet the developing growth patterns and needs of county residents. That will be an element of the plan update. And then improving public awareness of the county parks, trails, and facilities. We will have a plan that will try and emphasize public awareness of our facilities for ultimate and maximizing usage of the parks. As part of the update, we also conducted a citizen park and recreation survey that was conducted on behalf of the county by the University of Wisconsin River Falls. We'll have the full survey available in the plan document, but just to give you a snapshot of what we've learned is that, no surprise, the most used parks are Glen Hills and Homestead. The facility with the highest rating by county residents was Homestead Park, again, one of the parks with more amenities within it. Services with most usage by county residents, the response were swimming beaches and hiking trails were the two most elements used within our county park system. When people were asked to ID what service was most important, boat ramps came to surface as number one for both county and non-county residents. As part of the survey, we also surveyed abutting counties, their residents, in terms of usage and rating of county parks. And then we asked which service should be expanded by county residents. The one item that received the majority response was hiking. People were very enthusiastic and rated hiking as a very important element they would like to see expanded. And then we asked how did county residents receive information on parks. Website was the number one with 57%, and then word of mouth, 51%, getting information through other people. Another item we're going to expand upon in the plan is touching on the Riverway Memorandum of Understanding, and this relates to the St. Croix River Crossing Bridge. It was an intergovernmental agreement between St. Croix County and the DOTs and DNRs of Minnesota and Wisconsin, the Federal Highway Administration, and National Park Service. And St. Croix County was provided $2+ million in funding to purchase sites to offset the mitigation of damages to the blufflands along the St. Croix River. And since then, the county's been very active in purchasing and tying up properties through purchase agreements. The ORF property along Bass Lake will provide an additional 1,360 feet of shoreline. That property was purchased. The Joyce Trust property was purchased in Holton to provide improvements in the property for the main trailhead servicing the St. Croix River Loop Trail. The Richards and Eckerd properties, these properties are adjacent to one another and abut the St. Croix River. In total, these parcels would protect 167 acres of green space and 2,800 feet of shoreline along the St. Croix River. The Richards property was purchased in 2015 and the Eckerds is currently under purchase agreement. And then as part of this process, we'll note that a park master plan will need to be conducted for this property to analyze the uses and site preservation practices due to some of the steep slopes on these properties. Then the Waldorf property is currently under purchase agreement. This would be a joint project with the town of St. Joseph in the Wisconsin DNR. 117 acres are under purchase agreement, 77 acres would go to the town of St. Joe, 40 acres would be retained by the county, and this parcel would be adjacent to Homestead Park. And these are just the basic locations of the properties I just mentioned, all within proximity to the bluff lines of the St. Croix River. The Eckert and Richards property just north of North Hudson, and then you see the ORF, Waldorf, and the St. Croix Crossing Trailhead, which is the Joyce Trust property. The plan will also include action plans and facility analysis for all the parks. So this is just a snapshot of what we're going to have for action plans. Through working with staff, we're going to identify improvements for the next 5 years that we believe are needed to maintain and upkeep the park. We'll have cost estimates. We'll also provide funding source information and approximate time frame for those improvements. And as you can see, the funding sources will vary. We will definitely try and use grant funding through applications to fund some of these improvements. Some of them will be through park budget. And then we also have some different programs that we can utilize staff and volunteer activity. In this case, it would be cleaning out some of the fishing line recycling stations up in the Glen Hills Park. And again, this is just a snapshot. We'll have action plans for each of the 10 park facilities. As part of this plan update, we're going to consider introducing basic design guidelines for future park facilities. This will assist in planning for construction of future park buildings and facilities, and will really try and help tie together and unify the image and identity of the St. Croix County parks. And to do this, we're introducing some basic design guidelines for roof forms, finish materials, earth tone color palettes that'll be promoted, and things like that. So that'll be an element or a chapter within the plan update. And again, we'll expand on this in the full document. Another thing we're going to talk about is trails. I already mentioned we'll talk about incorporating the 2017 St. Croix County Bike and Pet Plan into the Outdoor Rec Plan document. We're also going to touch on the St. Croix River Crossing Loop Trail that hopefully will be up and operating by 2019. This is the loop trail that utilizes the former lift bridge, the new bridge, and then trail connections in Minnesota and Wisconsin that would complete the loop. And then we'll also talk about the importance of snowmobile trails and how the county park coordinates with the Department of Natural Resources and the St. Croix County Snowmobile Association to provide 217 miles of snowmobile trails throughout the county. And then as far as approximate timelines, we're talking to you tonight about just the contents of what to expect in the plan update. We hope to have the full draft ready by early June. We have a couple pieces we need to finish with that, but by early June we would like to get that full draft to the development committee and begin posting it online. We would like to have a public information meeting on this item by late June or July, and that's basically an open meeting that's hosted by staff. People come in over a range of times, like from 5 to 8 o'clock, and allow people to free flow, look at the information and provide comments in an informal setting. And then by July and August, in that time frame, we would hope to have a public hearing established with the Community Development Committee. And then sometime in August or September, we would like to get this to the county board for final action. So that's the tentative time frame. That completes my presentation, and we'd be happy to answer any questions you might have.
Is the signage for the bike path included in this then, or is that something separate?
The outdoor recreation plan will reference it. We're going to take bits and pieces of the bicycle plan that's been adopted and incorporate it as part of the outdoor rec plan. It's going to be a small component or a summary. We're not going to be putting the full bike and ped plan into the outdoor rec plan, since it is technically a separate plan document.
I'm wondering when we might close on the Waldorf property.
Both the Waldorf and Eckert properties actually got notice today that the DNR has completed all its steps. Actually, they completed them a couple weeks ago, and the packet has now been delivered to Joint Finance. Joint Finance Committee at the state level will have 14 days to comment. And then at the end of that time, we should be getting our funding notification. And we have been notified that the estimated amounts that we would be funded, and our understanding is it would be adequate for sure for the Eckert property, and Waldorf property would be very close. And then we did hear, without being told how much, but that we are probably going to be awarded additional funding. So we should have enough for both. And but we haven't got that final number yet. So it closed within a month after we've got our funding award.
Thank you. Any other questions? It's a good overview. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, John.
So next we do move on to the discussion on bicycle trail signage. Mm-hmm.
Give Julie a second to move that over and bring up on the screen the materials that were provided. And so as you might, for those who were a member of the committee in the past, as you might recall, back in, Julie, you can't move that down either?
I will in a second.
Sorry, I thought maybe you were.
It's not where it should be, so I'm getting it to where it should be.
Got it. So at the March meeting, the March end of March meeting, the committee at that time voted to have us move forward to the Transportation Committee the proposal to spend up to $10,000 on wayfinding for two routes and minor enhancements. There was a good discussion on whether or not that should be funded completely out of the $100,000 that is in the capital improvement plan for implementation of the bike and ped plan, or if it should be funded to ask the local communities for some kind of partnership funding. So at that time, what the staff offered to do was, we knew that there was a Towns Association meeting coming up in April, and so Brett Boudreau was able to attend that Towns Association meeting. I was out of town myself, and kind of give them an overview of the bike ped signage plan, and then ask for any thoughts. So we'll have Brett give us a little update on that meeting he attended.
I attended the Towns Association meeting last month. Gave the Towns Association a brief update on many topics. Talked about the pilot project and related that we're working with CDD, the Community Development Committee, and Transportation Committee in implementing those demonstration routes and how the signs would be paid for and installed. I really didn't get any other feedback as far as whether there were any willing contributors or anything like that. So.
And also, in the meantime, Brett has been in contact with our highway commissioner, and we shared with them what action the committee took and let them know that they have it on the agenda for their meeting next Monday to discuss this. They have the same materials this committee was provided in March, and the additional materials that you were provided in the past few days, they've got those also?
They do not have those, no.
Okay, we can get them
to
them about tomorrow, so they have them also. And so they will be discussing it, this is what we understand. Okay. And at that point, I think it's any questions from the materials from our new committee members?
A couple. Is it voluntarily? That they, any of the villages or cities, whatnot, want to contribute to the signage?
I think it would. Okay, if you look at this map on the screen right now, just to recap, I'll keep it very brief. There are a variety of recommended roads that are safe as they are with minor enhancement, signs and or perhaps some paint that were identified in the bike ped plan. So what our staff did over the past few months is put those roads together into routes that would make attractive bicycling options for people without a lot of money to improve them. And then we put them all on a map, and then we sat down and talked about what would make sense if we had limited money to add some signage, and we developed a sign. I don't think we brought that tonight.
No.
You could run back down to the office and get it if you wanted to see it. But we developed a sign, and then that sign can be created in one of two sizes. We'll probably, moving forward, we think that it would be best to have it in only one size. That sign can be put up in the cities and villages. It can be put up by towns on additional routes if towns are interested. It can be ordered, you know, work on a joint order so that there would be cost savings. We provided the information on the cost of the signage. You have that. And basically, we came up with these two routes. Right now, we're just calling them Route 15 and 20, or I think we actually had A and 20 or something. We do not want to consider the actual names of the routes. At this time, we want to have a little more opportunity for them to perhaps be adjusted so that they don't conflict with any local roads. So we actually think they'll probably be like a 20A or 20B or B20 or BA, B15, that kind of thing. But these two routes are all we would sign initially as sort of a pilot project. that the county staff propose, and then if cities or villages wanted to do additional signage, again, they could participate, but no, but we aren't proposing spending money yet. Most of them need improvements.
That didn't answer my question.
I'm sorry. Can you say it again?
It's voluntary.
Yes.
They don't have to contribute.
Right, but we also aren't putting any signs up in cities or villages in this proposal.
And in towns as well, we cannot put up signs in a town on a town road without the town's permission.
Can they give permission for you to put it up, but then not have to pay for it?
They certainly can, if the county wants to pay for it. And if we set up, you know, that's this whole cost-sharing thing, whether the county does the cost share, whether the county pays for everything in the pilot project, then are we setting the precedent for the future for any cost-sharing that might occur? But we definitely, no matter what town road it is, we need to have approval from the town to put a sign there.
And are the signs going to be the same? Because I know in the packet there was a variety of different kinds of signage from different places. Are these going to be consistent with all signs throughout all Wisconsin, or is it going to be unique to just St. Croix County?
We're proposing unique to St. Croix County, but it does meet AASHTO, which is the National Transportation Standard criteria. We worked very closely with Rob Creechy and his staff on that. So yes, they would be unique to St. Croix County, but they would be somewhat similar, and there'd only be one design for the county, hopefully. Hopefully the local municipalities would all agree to that.
I think Grant's going to get the sign right now.
Great.
Since our last meeting, we didn't have any of this information in our packet last time around, and so I did some more research in the interim and talked with the town of Hudson people, including the chair of their town board. And I got a little map that he gave me, actually, which is better than the map that we've got in our packet. And I'll just pass it around. But it's at the west end of what we're calling Route 20. And that's basically 3 miles on McCutcheon Road and just about a half a mile on 100th Avenue. And about a mile and a quarter of that has gravel shoulder about this wide without any bike lanes or anything. And Chairman Johnson told me that he is pretty confident that his town board would totally object to having any of these signs on their town road, because they don't want to, they'd just soon put up signs, if you're bicycling on these roads, you're doing so at your own risk, because it's 45 miles per hour speed limit, narrow two lanes, about a mile and three quarters of the 3 miles does have a little bit of a, I didn't measure it, but I drove it this afternoon, and does have a little bit of a space that's paved for a bike lane, but it's not a big width. So at any rate, I don't think you're going to get a good reception for this, and I don't like the idea of having additional designations for roads that we already have designations for. So I'm just adding to confusion, especially if we're going to use numbers, and if we're talking about 20A, so we're going to have a number and a letter, that'll be great. So am I on County Road 20, or am I on County Road A, or am I on State Highway A or 20? I don't know. I just, and putting those signs up on a road that has this much gravel shoulder on it would be like putting up the Budweiser sign before you had any access to kegs. I think this is very premature. So.
Thank you for looking into that. We'll have to talk to the township as we go through the process, and we'll have to probably have a public meeting or two if that is what is the consensus, and talk about how to deal with it at that time. There'll be some hiccups, there's no question. And those are concerns, legitimate concerns, traffic and bicycles, and as we develop a bicycle culture, you're going to see some friction. And we're going to have an opportunity to overcome it, and overcome it for the economic development potential is critical to the community that I see us developing. So I'm hopeful that the people who live in Hudson Township will have an open mind. I understand the safety concern. I'm a bicyclist. I've ridden on roads like that, and I know that it can be scary. So, you know, we'll listen to their concern. We'll take a hard look at it, and it certainly needs to be talked through. And I appreciate you bringing it up. So, at that point, what's our next step?
Well, I think that if you have something that you want to add or whatever, or change, you do have a motion that was passed at your last committee meeting, and at this point, all that motion does is take it to the Transportation Committee. I would encourage you to let the Transportation Committee weigh in. They have not had an opportunity to discuss this, so it'd be interesting to hear what they have to say. And then the direction on the capital improvement funding that for bike implementation of the bike ped plan has always been that any spending of money needed to be approved by both the Community Development Committee and the Transportation Committee. And as you hopefully remember, all of you, that when we did apply for a TAP grant for the route from the Holton, from the trailhead in Holton, down to River Road, and on River Road to Willow River State Park, off-road trail along State Highway 35 in the right-of-way, that the county board did approve applying for that grant. That doesn't mean they funded the match, but they've approved applying for it. And so that has been submitted, and at that time, what we put in that packet was that at least some of the money for the match would come from this $100,000 that is in the KIP. And that, I think we estimated approximately $60,000 would come from that. That would not be the full match, and that was made very clear. So right now, that's all we've committed. There could be more that comes from that, but at this point, and we were obviously trying with the cost estimates on these putting up signage, wayfinding, we were trying to keep those costs minimal, and that's why I think it was up to $10,000 with the expectation we wouldn't spend a full $10,000. And the objective with these two routes was to get people from the east side of the county, basically Glen Hills Park, to the west side of the county, Willow River State Park, thinking that that would be a very attractive, tourist-oriented route that might be very popular with the various people who use those two parks. And the north-south one was to try to get people from the north side of the county to the south side and vice versa, with the objective of looking at the city of New Richmond has quite a few bike trails, and city of River Falls has quite a few bike routes. So perhaps that would be an attractive route for a lot of residents or tourists also. So those were the two things we were trying to provide as ways to begin the implementation of the bike ped plan. So it's up to you. How do you guys want to proceed?
Let's listen to what they have to say at transportation, and we'll bring this up, probably put it on the agenda for our next meeting, and give you guidance at that point.
Okay.
So that brings us to solid waste management review and questions and answers.
All right. As directed by the committee at the organizational meeting, we do not have any materials that we have on the agenda. What we did was send out all the materials that were provided at previous meetings. We sent out links to the committee members and asked that everyone take some time and review those materials. And what we're here to do today is offer any answer to any questions, provide any information. The status of the you said the solid waste plan, so I'll start with that one, even though that's number four, not number three. But the status of that one is that this committee has voted to move it forward to the county board for adoption, and it will be on the June agenda. Mm-hmm. So, were there any questions or on the solid waste management plan?
Yep.
I know that there were, this is not in any particular order, is that there's some communities that are not part of the RU. Can they join anytime?
Yes, they could switch and join. Used to be they could not, because we would have had to recalculate our funding formula, which actually would have reduced funding to those communities that were still in. But the DNR has changed the rules, and if a community wanted to join, then we would be happy to do that.
Why do they not join?
Back in the 90s, when they were given the option to join, everybody had to make the decision really fast, okay? It was a very quick decision. I think we had like a couple months. And at that time, there were some communities that thought, well, we'd rather just manage it ourselves. Glenwood City, for instance, had a very long-standing and very well-run recycling program, and they did not want to be part of the RU. So then they didn't. They chose to be their own. Most of the communities that are in it actually would, most of those communities would do better if they were in our RU. We do get extra funding because of volume, and we do all the paperwork except for the reporting on amounts for the communities. Obviously, our other programs like our clean sweep, our appliance collection, our electronics collection, those are countywide. Everyone can participate. Not everyone can, only the RU members can participate in the recycling program. They have the assistance of our recycling specialist that she answers questions. She does that countywide. But at the same time, there are limits to what she does because the responsible unit members are contributing the money. Their membership contributes the money to pay for that program. Why they chose not to, I really can't say.
And to me, it just, to one extent, it doesn't make sense that they are part of this county, they're on their own, and we don't know what they do with their stuff. That's, maybe I misread it in the pamphlet, but it was saying you don't have that information.
No, we can't. They do report it to the state every year, just like we have to report for all of the members of the responsible unit. We report all that data to the state. We do all the reporting, grant writing. There's annual grant writing, annual reporting. We do it on behalf of all the RU members.
Okay.
They do it on their own. Okay?
Okay. How in the world, I did read this stuff, I was trying to catch up and stuff. The Uniform Minimum Recycling Code, mm-hmm. which is great, but how in the world can we ensure that it's enforced or followed?
Well, we do actually enforce it. The county ordinance incorporates it, and when we do it the same as we do on zoning or other violations. And I want to say we had at least a half a dozen to a dozen violations this past year that our code enforcement staff go out with our recycling specialists, and we do enforce it. If we get complaints about burning barrels, we're out there. We usually can't catch the burning barrels, I'll just be honest, but if we got a complaint and we caught it, we'd make people shut it down and get rid of it because they are illegal in this state, as an example. More often we get complaints. The most common one is from multifamily buildings where the people are frustrated, they want to recycle, and they're not providing it. And we have done complete audits of every multifamily facility in the county at one time. We did a more of an audit and an educational process and got it all up and running. But then there are definitely ownership changes and people stop doing it. Another one is we've done audits, for instance, of every single convenience store in the county and forced them all to put recycling containers out. So if you see a place that does not have it, that's illegal, and we will go in and get them to change it. As always, our objective is to fix the problem, not collect money and fine people, but they do have to do it. We enforce it.
Okay. And one second to last, I have a how or who and where is the disposal cost that exceeds the grant funding coming from? I mean, it was saying that you get grant money, but the disposal cost is more than what you get.
Yes.
So who pays?
The local municipalities, even in the RUs. Ever since we started it, what was agreed in the very beginning is that the county's expenses for managing the grant and doing the paperwork and having a recycling specialist comes off first, off the money we get as a responsible unit. Okay, then after we pay for all of the county expenses, not including the appliance collection, which is a pass-through cost, not electronics pass-through, clean sweep, totally separate, just the county cost for being the recycling unit management. After that, we give back every year all the extra money, okay, within some money. There's always it's never easy to be exact on our accounting. But anyway, we give it back, and we usually run at a rate of about 60 to 66% of the costs that are turned into us is what we reimburse. So the other 30-some percent is covered by the local responsible unit. So they are coming out ahead.
And my last comment, it's a combination of, you're saying all residents should have access to curbside recycling, and also goal two, which is create the uniform recycling requirement, that they have the same consistent recycling opportunities, is going to be challenging for both of those.
Yes, but it's still a good goal.
Is it a realistic goal?
I think it's a goal that we should keep working at. We've been working at it for years. There's absolute proof that curbside recycling raises the recycling rate tremendously. Drop-off centers, no matter how popular they are, no matter how much everybody loves going to the old dump, no matter how great it is to go visit your neighbors, I'm sorry, but people do not recycle as much. Our objective here, the overall reason St. Croix County is involved in this, is to protect our environmental resources. And reason for that is to reduce the need for future landfills anywhere in the state of Wisconsin, to improve what we can recycle and as much as we can, to protect the resources from all the dumping that goes on from people who don't want to pay for services. The best, you can just go to any one of the municipalities that do it. When you charge for it and it's not separated, and you say if you pay your fee, your garbage and your recycling are one fee, it's highest rate, there's tons of data proving that. So now we don't make anybody do that. That's the local municipality's choice. They can do what they want. Many of the municipalities have gone to very straightforward collection of recycling and garbage is one fee. Whether they do it where it's direct billing, like the city of Hudson, I have to pay my own fee every month directly to the hauler, even though the city does the bidding and says there's only one hauler allowed. Or it might be like the town of Hudson that actually puts it on the tax rolls. They collect the money, they pay it at one time, but it's still limited to one hauler. Then you have other communities that require curbside recycling, but you can have 12 haulers running up and down your roads. They don't care. You can contract with anyone you want, but they have to offer it in certain ways. That's St. Joe. Every community is different, but that goal, the reason for us as staff to say that the goal should be and has been, we didn't change one word of the goals from the previous document that they came out of the comprehensive plan, but is because solid waste, curbside recycling is the best way to accomplish the objectives and accomplish what the mission is. We just provide information and support.
Yeah, that's all that I have at this point. I mean, there was a lot of reading that I did this week.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thanks for pitching in. I agree with you that it seems like a big goal, but it's working in many communities already, and the curbside thing is working, and it makes sense, and it's a good goal. So I
would just add that, for instance, I don't know if it's true, but I had heard that the city of New Richmond is looking into possibly changing. So if they do, yes, to single stream. So it may happen, and we, again, what we do is keep the information flowing and let them make any decisions they want, so.
They'll have to come up with also some way of making sure that the lids stay on and they're weighted, because you're out in the country and it gets windy. Literally with mail, the post office literally says, there's some times when I open your mailbox and I'm going to put letters in and the wind takes it and blows it all across the field next to me, and there's nothing they can do about it. Well, if it goes into a pond, they're not going to go. There's a pond right across the street from us, and it is and it's quirky, but that's part of the challenges for having curbside.
It works great in Star Prairie Township. That single stream that they do in Star Prairie Township is fantastic. It's a regular closed-lid container, and they put everything in it, and the kids are trained, and they roll it down once a week, or once every other week, and it's phenomenal. It works, and I wish they did that in the city of New Richmond. So, at any rate, that's recycling, and thank you very much. So, we'll go back to number three, review and questions and answers, the comprehensive zoning ordinance update.
And there again, we provided the links to the materials. John Hilger and Brett and myself are all here. We'll try to answer your questions. John is the project manager on that, and he was even just last night at a local community meeting. So we're doing a lot of public outreach on this multi-year project. So any questions?
Not as anywhere near as many on this one, because it was just too complicated. But out of curiosity, with the residents, they kind of explained it, but why did you eliminate the minimum lot size? It mentioned something about soil, site conditions, and wastewater treatment, but that could change, and so could that change the lot size? Or if the site conditions are a certain way and you have a certain lot size and they change,
I don't think we've eliminated the minimum lot size, so perhaps that's a question we need to go over that section specifically and maybe meet with you afterwards or something. Because we have not eliminated we've changed minimum lot size, reduced them to make them more user-friendly, but we haven't eliminated them.
In the beginning, we've been throwing out all kinds of ideas, and one of them was to go to a density-based system for some of the districts, and then eliminate lot sizes. If you got a certain density allowed on your property, then you'd get the same number of dwelling units with a smaller lot size that allows flexibility in design. But then it also comes with a host of other issues, and so it's one idea, and I'm not sure what section you saw that in, but or where it was online, but
I wouldn't be able to remember.
I believe that may have been in one of the initial documents when we were first starting the discussion, but I think things have evolved since then, and I'm not sure if that's going to be one we're going to pursue.
And I want to make sure I understand that it's because you're changing how the commercial is done into like three different ways, so that each separate lot can be one of the three new ways of zoning, correct? They don't have to choose one form of zoning for their whole community. It can be individual lot-wise, right?
We've always had a menu of districts. Okay. We're expanding the menu of districts, giving more flexibility and more options to communities.
Okay, have there been, how are you going to handle, I just have a question, lots of questions about use regulations, because they're kind of the whole thing that's the basis of zoning to an extent.
Correct. And so we're working on tables of uses, we're working on a variety of changes, extensive changes based on feedback and input we've gotten.
So what will be allowed in each different zone then?
Okay. Yes.
And my last question, believe it or not, okay, where do windmills fit in? Talked about CAFOs in there and businesses and industries, but you've got a windmill situation.
Sure.
That I didn't see anywhere in there. Is that a business? How is that defined?
We are still discussing the solar and wind turbine alternatives.
Okay, yeah, that's true, because I know Hammond has a big solar.
Yeah, and we didn't really hear a lot of that in our public input sessions that we had initially in this process, but we do know that is something we need to address within the code.
You'll probably have to go out to them rather than them come to you. And I know this is live and public, but that's the honest gosh truth.
No, and we do plan on having a number of public input sessions where we will have to go out and revisit the towns to talk about the details. So, forthcoming.
And you recall this is only for those towns that choose to be in county zoning, and right now Forest has its own zoning. So at this point, they are not. We did invite every one of the towns that was not in county zoning to participate, even if they just wanted to learn and take advantage of the consulting services we're utilizing. So far, all of them chose not to. So
that's it. And this was just something that I'm going to learn a lot more of as time goes on. So that was just a couple of shots. Okay, thank you.
I would mention that when these public meetings come up, that we should help invite people and get people who have expressed concern or heard rumors, especially, bring them to the meetings, encourage them, give them a call, whatever, bring them to the meetings, because I have heard some fairly wild-eyed rumors, which I won't repeat, lest they become further ingrained in the imagination of the public. And we've done, I think John's been helpful in dispelling some of them, but I would like to see as many people come to the meetings as possible, because the information that we put out will return better input from the public. And people who are in town, people who are in townships, people who are farmers, would just like to see as many people come as possible. So that's all I have to say. Yeah. It does looking for the chairman. I'm not. The next, do we have anything else? All right. The next thing.
I got a question. So where are we at on the next, on the comp plan? What we're going to do, you got to do some more public?
Yes, there will be more. John, I believe the next meetings aren't for a couple of months.
So what we've done over the last 8 months is we've taken a lot of public input. We've had two separate rounds of meetings with our towns across the county. We had an online survey. We have a citizen task force that's been created. We've touched base with the county board, community development committee, even some of our professional users of our code, surveyors, engineers. So we've taken a lot of input over the last 8 months. We've taken what we've heard and we've lumped them into some basic findings that we are now taking, and we're going to start drafting a code based on that input. So right now we're kind of in the in-between stage. We're in the process of drafting a code, which really won't be finished until August or September. Once we finish a draft, we are going to have another round of town meetings where we're going to visit with the towns, and we're also going to have another public information meeting, likely sometime in September. And then we'll also post the draft online, so people who can't make it to our meetings will have the possibility of reviewing it online and making comments that way. We really don't anticipate having a formal public hearing on this until early 2019. It is about a year and a half to 2 year process. We're being very deliberate. We're trying to involve as much of the public as possible at different points in the process. That's our objective. So that's kind of where we're at timing-wise right now.
Thank you.
And John or myself are available for the town plan commission or town board meetings. I know John has been attended several of them and has another one next week, so.
Any further thoughts or questions? Very good, thank you. Moving on to the land and water resource management plan.
Okay, and again, I'll just, that document, it gets updated every 10 years with a shortened review every 5 years. It is due to be readopted this year. It is the guiding document that directs and establishes the goals and objectives that we, our land and water conservation, and a lot of our related activity for our whole department work from. I would just back up and say that you can see that between the outdoor rec plan, the solid waste management plan, the land and water plan, the comprehensive plan, this department focuses on these documents, and that sets our work plan every year. We use those things as our guiding documents. So this is required under state law that it has to be done in order to continue receiving funding. Anyway, it has been sent. What we did is we hired a consultant to assist us with it, and it went through extensive public input. We had a very large guiding committee that was created, had county board members on it, town people, and a lot of agency and farmers, and a very diverse group, and then went through the process of updating it, incorporated for the basically all the information that was in the final report done by on the water study committee last year. We incorporated all of that into the report. We did not change really the goals and objectives for the most part from what was in the previous plan, but we did add a goal and objective related to more outreach and input and more public more educational opportunities. And so all of that has been done, and that plan was approved by this committee on the 29th of March and sent submitted to the state for DNR and DATCAP review. After the DNR and DATCAP review, it will come back to us. There may be some changes we have to make. Then we will hold a public hearing. It will go to the DATCAP board in August. We already have an assigned date when it has to be done and there. And then after that, it'll come back to county board for adoption in September. So we are hoping that the public hearing on the plan will happen in July, or if there's no county board meeting in July, then in August. And that's what we're anticipating is August at this time. That allows us to have one more round of public input in June. We hope that since it went out in 60 days is what the state has to review it, we should have it back sometime in June. So any questions on the document and the materials that were provided a link?
It was a lot of work, actually. I participated in that. It was very, very, very interesting. So, thank you. Request for future agenda items. Mr. Coulter.
Yeah, it's come up tonight and relates to water quality, but we have several situations in the county where we have wastewater treatment issues, and I'm not sure that there's a direct county role in this, but I think perhaps we could facilitate some possibilities where there might be opportunities for collaboration. And for instance, you know, Hammond's got big issues with their recently built wastewater plant. Roberts has some. They're flooding out their neighbor to the south with their wastewater treatment plant. And Hudson's at near capacity and is looking at building another plant. And I'm not sure that, because I'm not familiar with the technology, but I'm sure some of our wastewater treatment people are in the various facilities, and that there's maybe some possibility for collaboration, and that maybe we could germinate that. And I'm not sure, but I think we should discuss it at maybe our next meeting. If somebody has some ideas, think about it, cogitate. That's my suggestion.
I appreciate your suggestion. I've given a a great deal of thought to this and actually looked into it. This is not, at this point, something that we're equipped to go into. Wastewater treatment is a municipal issue. It's not a county issue. And the municipalities that you're referring to have strains. They do. And it's something that I have empathy for. But at this time, we have a great deal on our plate. And I think I'm hesitant to put this one on our agenda. And I'd certainly be willing to talk about this later, and we may want to visit the work that was done years ago. We have reports from what year did we already go around the bend with the studies of Twin Lakes? Was it 2008, 2007?
I don't recall the exact date. I do know that there was a group that met, and there was investigation of the concepts of having a joint wastewater treatment, and I believe that there was discussions of possible sites for a treatment facility. Just so you understand, at that time, I do know that the discussion ended up that perhaps in Ellsworth, down in Pierce County, would be the most logical site for a joint wastewater treatment. It was looked at to be a very regional type of option, and then some costs were explored. I don't know if Ed perhaps remembers that also. We could look for our files on that. I would, if we do put it on an agenda, I would ask, do you want those local community representatives invited? And I would also ask if, since that falls under the DNR, if it would be appropriate to have the regional director from DNR to have appropriate, if he or appropriate staff would be present. So I would ask if you want that.
I appreciate that. We'll take that under consideration. I appreciate it. Is there any other requests for future agenda items? Nope. All right. Now, announcements and correspondence. We're going to ask Ken to talk about our finance report.
I'd like to announce the correspondence I left on your desk. It's the financial reports, and through a glitch in the system, they didn't get it put into the packet. So these are brand new style of financial reports. This is from the ERP system. We spend a lot of money on it, and one of the perks of that is that we get a lot of information out. So you're going to see that it's a longer format. And the way you would read this is, I start with the revenues. And the far left side of the page, you'll see general running down, and then it turns to parks, recycling. Those are the funds. So in the general fund, then, in that grouping, you'll see the different departments or subcategories that are related to this standing committee. So register of deeds reports here, the sanitation, UW extension, resource land and water conservation, zoning, economic development. So all those different entities that report to the standing committee, you're seeing then here. So we go through revenues first, and then we go through expenses, same format layout. And then when it changes to parks, recycling, land and water conservation, those are the segregated funds that we run for those. And you'll see that the second category after like parks says all cost centers, because it's the all of parks that we want. We're not specifying any particular part of parks, it's all of parks that we're picking up. So those are the revenues we go through, and then we go through the expenses, and then we subtotal at the end. When you look at the columns going across, you notice we start with fiscal year 16, and then we go to 2018 year to date. There is a 2017 that's going to fit in between those two. We'll have that for you next month with our unaudited numbers. And then we look at budget and the balance and the percentage remaining. So that's kind of the layout of the report. So if you have any suggestions for improvements on that, these are fully customizable, and I'd be happy to make some changes. And I'm sure Ellen will have some suggestions for me.
I've been very good to Ken and only given him a page or two at a time.
Any immediate questions? I'm going to ask one. Ken, Would you point out, do you know of any anomalies here that you had, if we combed through this, that you'd expect us to find?
Yep. There is. I point one right out on the very front page. So a little past a third of the way down, it's the general fund. It's resource, land, and water conservation. Public charges of services year-to-date is $9.
Yeah.
So that's an anomaly. Because you see everything else around it is zeros. That was the wrong cost center used in the general fund. It actually shouldn't be a resource, land, and water conservation in the general fund. That should have fallen to its own fund. So something got posted to the wrong account. Yep, $9. So there's one there. I don't know if there's any... there's a $7 one under expenses, the second grouping under expenses. There's a highway street and administration that got coded into something for community development, a $7 one. So that's kind of how we go back and, as the department heads, they see these anomalies and they know something's wrong, and then they tell me and we track it down, fix it. So you'll get used to these reports as you see them month after month. But change is inevitable.
And I would add that there's some names and some wording that are all going to be very new that you perhaps haven't seen before, like the word sanitation. That's the new system, calls it sanitation, that you're going to be, it's just all new. It's not typical. Even I'm not sure exactly what's in sanitation right now, so.
This is the new typical.
Yes.
Well, now I'm curious, what is sanitation?
I don't know for sure. I'd have to go look it up.
So you're looking at the Wisconsin Sanitation System Fund?
Probably. I'm going to guess that's our POUTS.
Yep. It's a segregated fund, is what I can tell you. And so we're excluding that money from the general fund. We're keeping track of it separately.
Like, for instance, what I'm pretty sure it is every private on-site wastewater treatment system that is installed, we collect money on behalf of the state of Wisconsin as part of the fees, and that money, every month, we send that money off to the state, and that's what that account would be.
So one of the things that I want to do with the accounting system as a whole is I want to make sure that we're reporting out every single account that the county has. And so there's 5 standing committees, and every account that we have is going to be reported to one of those standing committees and then as a summarized total to the county board. So if you added up the 5 standing committees' reports, it would equal the county board's report. And so every single number is going to get reported somewhere. So some of these numbers that may be small and just pass-throughs, you're still going to end up seeing them because of that, though.
Thank you for not dumbing it down. All right. The date of the next meeting.
No.
Oh, I'm so sorry. Announce. We're still announcing.
Yes. So several announcements. I just want to give you some materials. First of all, tomorrow and the next day is the Household Hazardous Waste Collection Program, or Clean Sweep. Here is a little summary page on that. For any of you who have been storing your stuff all year, please consider bringing your hazardous materials to the collection program, and there's a list there of what's accepted and what's unacceptable. If you recall from reports previous years, we have hundreds of people who go through this program every year, usually over 400 people. We have a lot of staff who are volunteering, and I really encourage you as committee members to get rid of your household hazardous waste and stop in and check it out. We will also have a fall one this year, and then we'll see after that. Couple changes to the program this year. We have always accepted medication programs. As you know, there's a program around that the county sponsors that in order to get rid of drugs, medications. And what we've done this year is created a new really kind of a postcard, and we'll be handing those out at the household hazardous waste collection program, and we've got on the back of that all of the locations where you can take your household hazardous waste. Take as many as you want of those brochures, pass them out to your friends, neighbors, and anyone you can think of so that they will utilize the program and keep those out of our water supply. It's not okay to flush them. No matter how many times you were told that as a kid, it's not. So, another project we have done with the same kind of brochure is how to recycle your fluorescent light bulbs. This is another little handout. It talks about how to do it, and it shows all the locations around the county that accept light bulbs, that you can get rid of them, sometimes for a small fee, sometimes for free. You can also bring them to our household hazardous waste collection, but because that collection program gets very, very busy and we've had people backed up, we're trying to really encourage people to take those fluorescent bulbs to any one of those other locations throughout the year. So with that, thank you, and I may talk to a couple of you afterwards about perhaps volunteering at the household hazardous waste collection, because we need a little extra help this year. Last item is, if you would recall, in the bike pedestrian plan document that was adopted, we were encouraged, or it was identified as an objective, to have more an annual meeting in which people, a coordination meeting in which we would discuss things and advocate and stakeholders could be involved. That annual meeting is coming up Wednesday, May 30th, 6:30 to 8:30 p.m. at the Baldwin Ag Center. Here's the agenda, here's what's going on, and we encourage any of you who are interested to attend. If you think that all of you will be there, we can certainly put out an announcement of a possible quorum. But those are our announcements for tonight.
Excellent. Any other announcements? All right, this has been good information, and I'm glad that we had the meeting, and I appreciate you all coming. Thank you. I will call us adjourned.